The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Hey, West Side Story. A play that could not be made today because of its, well, realism. Everyone likes to be in America. Would you like to be in America if you came from a third world cesspool and you could walk into a country and they give you hot burritos and the police have to change your child's diaper and the minute you get there, Marvin from the ACLU is foaming at the mouth to give you legal advice and doctors are giving you medical care and dentists are giving you teeth care and veterans in America who fought for America dying in the hallways of the VA hospital, and you have a goofball for president who likes you more than he does the American people, wouldn't you also love to be in America? Well, you would. That's why I'm playing West Side Story, because, of course, the play could not be made today. I guarantee you, had West Side Story been offered to a producer today, you would say, oh, no. Oh, who wrote these lyrics? We can't have lyrics like that. Can't produce a play like that today. It might be offensive. Offensive to who? The freeloading bums who don't belong here to begin with. If you came here illegally, you're a criminal. And that's a really sad thing to say. I understand that. I am the son of an immigrant. Of course, there's a difference between a legal immigrant and an illegal immigrant. We all know that. Oh, we do know that? We know it everywhere but in New York City, San Francisco, and all of the other denizens of filth. For example, there's a judge in San Francisco who just had to explain why 66,000 arrest warrants were thrown in the garbage. A so-called chief judge of San Francisco, which is a laughingstock, said he and his legal eagle colleagues threw away 66,000 arrest warrants for quality of life crimes, such as sleeping on the sidewalk. What else did they do? Being drunk in public. Oh, urinating on sidewalks. They threw them in the garbage. And that's because the judge, John Stewart, the good liberal, defended the court's action Tuesday by saying, you're putting somebody in jail because they're poor and can't pay a fine. We got a lot of criticism, but we thought it was the right thing to do. My friends, are you listening to what I just said? Did you hear what I just said to you? That they've thrown these tickets in the garbage for people who've urinated on the streets, who have slept on the sidewalk. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Well, I'll make it another, I'll put it another way. There's an article in today's rag in the local Bay Area, county by county look at the Bay Area voting for Donald Trump. They think it's a joke, okay? So guess what came out of the look at the nine counties around San Francisco? Well, of course, the majority voted for the loser, Hillary Clinton. Well, that we know. That you can pretty much figure out. But what you may not know is that the crackpot Jill Stein got more votes in Berkeley, California than Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton won 90% of the vote, while Jill, the troublemaker Stein, received 4.6% of the vote in Berkeley, while Trump got only 3.2% of the vote in Berkeley. So Berkeley has the lowest Trump vote in the nation among cities with populations over 100,000. Not so oddly, Detroit had the fewest amount of votes for Trump, giving him only 3.1% of the vote to Clinton's 95%. And you know why Detroit has the lowest vote for Trump? Muslims. Muslim immigration. Detroit, you know that. So now let's look at the 66,000 arrest warrants thrown out for life quality of life crimes in San Francisco. Then look at the people who didn't vote for him. And the Savage Theorem is simple. In other words, let's make it simple. The higher the liberal quotient, the higher the LQ, the more crime, bums, and feces on the streets. Now, if I said that and it weren't true, it would be offensive. But since I said it and it is true, it might be offensive, but it's also true. So if the truth offends you, it's too bad. What can I say to you? Here's another article related to it. Trump's victory jolts Bay Area minority communities. Oh, boo-hoo. Why is it jolting them? What do you mean Trump's victory jolts them? Muslim, and then they show Muslim, of course, like they represent all of America now. Muslim American somebody with his daughter is worried about a Donald Trump presidency and prays with his son. Isn't that nice? They're the only ones who pray. And he's afraid that they're going to kill us. The words crushed him and left him stunned. He had to put his child to bed, holding him, saying, "Dad will make sure you're okay," said the father. And then the father said, "The climate doesn't seem as peaceful as what you'd want for them. It's not the America I grew up." Oh, you get the whole story. But the fact of the matter is, didn't we have a terrorist attack just the other day from a peace-loving Muslim? Oh, you forgot about it? The story that was not covered by the San Francisco newspapers? The story about the peaceful Muslim who drove his car into a crowd of students and then jumped out with a knife to start stabbing them? And only because this bigoted, psychotic immigrant was stopped by a cop who shot him dead? Were other children not stabbed by this bum? So which way does the bigotry run? I'm asking you a question. We hear all the time about Islamophobia. How about Americophobia? How about Americophobia from these wonderful immigrants who hate this country? I'm sick and tired of hearing this upside-down, backwards reflection of this great nation. I am the son of an immigrant. And when my people came here, they didn't come here to stab people in the street and jump the curb with a car, run them over. So don't tell me everybody's innocent and everybody's going to be picked on. That's the opening. That's all. Now I have to have some music before I tell you what I really want to talk about. You're going to be surprised because it's not going to... That was the whole political part of the show. I'm giving up politics after this today. I mean today, because it's Christmas time and Hanukkah time, and I want to be nice to everybody. I don't want to offend anyone. I want to make certain that everyone from other cultures and religions feel welcome in America. I want to make sure that they get free pizza and free dental care. I want to make sure that when they sneak over the Border Patrol agents don't apprehend them, but give them hot tacos. Or is it burritos? And if they don't give them burritos that are hot enough, they might get fired under Barry Obama. Boy, I hope this changes. God, do I hope this changes. I just hope that Trump doesn't get moved to the left on this one. I really do. But I don't want to talk about politics. You know what's on my mind? It's already December, right? We got to December without knowing it. Here we are. The holidays are upon us. We already had the wonderful family event of Thanksgiving. Many of you had a good time. Some of you had family time, which was not very good. And these are very stressful times. It's well known amongst psychologists that these are about the most stressful times for many people in America. Not only because they have to be with people they despise, mainly members of their family who they never see. They're thrown like in an obscure way into a room with people they have nothing in common with except DNA. And so the politics don't match. Nothing matches. And then it's very uncomfortable for most people unless they're a close-knit family that live near each other and, you know, somewhereville. And this still exists, I guess. But that's one stress. And the other stress, it's in a big one, a very big one, is the issue of being alone during the holidays. See, a lot of Americans have no families. They've moved away because they were marching to a different drummer. And because they marched to a different drummer and they were so wild and free and they moved to Berkeley that they have nobody to be with around these holidays. So they use more drugs than normal. Let's say on a normal day they use one line, now they use three. Or let's say they hit the crack pipe once a week, now they hit it five times a week. Or let's say they're a sex addict instead of random sex with strangers. Once a week, it's five times a week around the holidays and double on Christmas Eve. And so all the addictions are now flaring to the surface. And as the days of December increase in number, meaning as we get closer to the actual holiday of the Mass of Christ, Christ's birthday, of course we know it's not actually Christ's birthday, it's the birthday of Mithras, a Persian mystic of the 11th century, but I don't want to go into that right now. I'll tell that story at another time. But we celebrate Christmas in America on December 25th. And, again, family time. It freaks a lot of people out. So they revert to their addictions, whether it be alcohol, whether it be drugs or sexuality. And I touched on sex addiction yesterday. It was a very interesting show. I know many people enjoyed it. And they enjoyed it because they like hearing other people who are crazier than them. The reason that they like stories about addiction and having people call about addiction is because they feel more stable. And so the reason I talked about sex addiction yesterday was because Anthony Weiner, remember him? Huma Abedin, vaguely remember? Huma Abedin. Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's number one aide, is married to a certifiable maniac, Anthony Weiner, who can't keep his hands off his you-know-what. And so he was sent to, instead of being sent to prison, and their child taken away from them, as would happen to you, if you're a man and you are seen in a picture that you took of yourself on you know, on a phone, touching yourself in underwear while your child is next to you, you go to jail for 30 years and your child's taken away. But because he's connected to the authorities in New York and the federal government, nothing happened to him. So he's back home after rehab. And I say to myself, wait a minute, they sent him to rehab in Tennessee? And what was the rehab for sex addiction? He rode a horse and he took long walks in the woods. You hear him talk to other people with the same problem, day and night indulging himself. Probably cost $30,000 a day. I don't know what it costs, a thing like this. But you know he's not cured. And my allegation was is that treatment doesn't work anyway. By and large, treatment does not work for addictions. The only thing that works for addictions, and I said it yesterday, I'll repeat it today, is a person who says to themselves, I'm a disgusting piece of garbage, and I'm going to stop doing this. In other words, only when you get disgusted with yourself and you hate yourself enough will you change. Nothing else will change you. All the rehab in the world is nonsense. It's a money mill. So I invited people who were addicts to call the show yesterday. And I thought that the sex addict calls were quite good. And again, I invite you, if you want to share your story, maybe you'll help someone else. Or maybe you just want to publicly shame yourself. You can call 855-407-282. Some people called and said, they're calling. I said, why would you call a national show when your wife doesn't know that you're a sex addict? And a guy would say, I don't even know why I'm calling. I said, come on, you're probably pulling my leg. It's a fake call. You don't know if people just want to be on the radio and hear their voice, or it's somebody, you know, in the business trying to get on. Who knows? But I think it can be enlightening, and I also think it can be entertaining, and I also think that maybe it'll help people understand that they're not alone, that part of the human condition is to be flawed, and that we're all flawed. And to one degree or another, we're all broken creatures. And to one degree or another, we're all freaking out around holidays. We know we're supposed to feel great, and many of us don't. We feel worse than we normally do. You walk around the malls and everyone with the bells and the dingling and the stores and the running and the shopping. And for a moment, maybe there's a little high on the shopping. I went to a mall the other day, and there was the Salvation Army guy, gave him a $5 bill. I felt good giving me a fiver. I wanted to put it in his hand rather than the bucket. I could hardly get the fiber into the bucket, by the way. A little advice to the Salvation Army people, make the slits a little bigger. But nevertheless, I felt bad for the guy. You know, the Salvation Army, out of all the organizations, is the only one that I think does any real good. So far as I know, the Salvation Army is not like Catholic charities. They're not bringing in Muslims from Syria. So far as I know, the Salvation Army is not like Lutheran Family Services or Jewish Family Services, which are front groups for immigration mafioso. Fundamentally, in my estimation. So I put a fiber in it, a big deal. I'm going to go to heaven for it. No. He said, thank you. No one else put a dime in his cup. Why is it no one gives them any money? What is wrong with people? Why are they so cheap? They'd rather go buy a cappuccino for $5? You know, these are reformed alcoholics and drug addicts in those places. And the fact is that people suffer greatly from their addictions. And now in America, with the legalization of marijuana, which is the greatest mistake the nation has ever made, because I've said to you before, marijuana is one of the most toxic drugs on the planet. It is a gateway drug. And since it is largely legalized, the weak people who are going to be getting marijuana as much as they want are going to need a bigger kick. So they're going to go to harder drugs. They're going to use more cocaine. They're going to use more crack cocaine. They're going to use fentanyl. They're going to use street drugs, because marijuana is no longer the wild, crazy drug it once was. And that, my friends, is the rest of the story.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. By 4:30 in the afternoon. I remember there were some lady producers, they danced in the hall, because no one had ever heard anything like that in radio till I came along, and here I am. So here we are, December, we're talking about the holidays. Some people are, you know, look happier than normal. A lot of people are more depressed than normal because of the family things and this and that, and memories that are not there, or bad memories for that matter about holidays. So, you know, let's not forget that. It's not all a cardboard cutout and a Hallmark card of Life with Father. When the holidays come around, a lot of people remember the family situation they had, and it's a horror, a nightmare. So they drink more, or they do this, or they do that. So we're talking about addiction. WABC Dove, fire away, 30 seconds or less, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's an honor. I'm a Jewish kid from Brooklyn, New York. I was addicted to marijuana since 10th grade. I'm 22 years old. I have friends who died from actual overdoses from eating too much marijuana that was caught with other drugs. And legalizing marijuana could be the dangerous thing that America has ever seen. Ever.
It's not. Look, here's the thing. I don't want to see people in prison for smoking marijuana, but I don't want to see people thinking that marijuana is a benign or harmless drug. There's an idiot called Jesse Ventura. You may remember him. Remember Jesse Ventura? He sounds deranged. He has a show on an unknown television channel owned by Russia. I saw it last night. He was pushing marijuana like it was the greatest thing on the planet. I don't understand how people don't understand. The toxicants in marijuana smoke are more dangerous than those in cigarette smoke. How do they not know that? Just from the medical point of view, lung cancer, I can name all of the toxicants in marijuana, but we're talking about the addictive value of marijuana, aren't we? All right, we are. Yeah, he could stay on. And sex addicts, please step up to the plate.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
I love December, but what can I tell you? Endless stupid shopping. People throw the gifts in the garbage or return them. But that's the society we live in. You know, conspicuous consumption, worthless gifts. I'm not a communist. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to walk around with a blue uniform, you know, like in North Korea for the rest of my life. Although there's a certain beauty in not having to, you know, think about your clothing every day. But all right, if that's what people do. Look, as a former anthropologist, there are rituals in all societies. I remember when I was studying the New Guinea Highlanders, and I'm talking a long time ago. Today they're not like New Guinea Highlanders anymore because of the advent of visitors and television. They're not like they were. But New Guinea Highlanders would have once a year a pig festival. All year long they would raise the pigs in the village. The whole year they wouldn't slaughter one of them. And then one day, over a weekend, a couple of days, they'd kill every pig in the village and eat the pig meat and just eat. That was what they did. That's what I see when I walk around a mall. I chuckle to myself and I say, well, I guess they're slaughtering the pigs here in America now. So it's cultural. And as a cultural relativist, meaning I've seen so many different cultures in my travels, in my reading, in my life, you know, I accept almost anything. I almost accept all human behaviors if they don't bother anybody else. They don't bother children. They don't bother the next guy. I don't care what people do, to be honest with you. It's like, do I sit in judgment? Of course I do. So do you. You sit in judgment of me, most of you. You're sitting listening to me. Are you critically listening to me? Of course you are. If you like me, you're listening to me critically to see if I make sense. If you don't like me, you're looking for me to fall off the high wire and kill myself. So you're all judgmental, especially you liberal phonies. You're the most judgmental people on the planet. WABC.
About just to, you know, talk more about why your negativity towards cannabis, when everything that's been told to us in our government here in the United States has pretty much been proven that it's a lie, everything they've told us about. You know,
well, let's start with the lies, okay? Do you know about the toxins in marijuana smoke, or don't you?
Well, I mean, that's not really proven that there is any toxins. I mean,
look, Carl, you sound like you sound like an uneducated moron who never went past high school. Is that true?
Yeah, and I have no college education. No, I don't.
Well, I can hear that in your voice. You don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean it's not proven? Well, chemistry and science exists. You don't have to have gone to college to read the scientific literature.
But, Dr. Savage.
What? Because you're a pothead, you know the truth?
No. I'm not saying that. But in Israel and in Spain,
forget Israel. I don't care about Israel or Schmizreel. Do you know that levels of hydrogen cyanide are 3 to 5 times higher in marijuana smoke than in tobacco smoke? Hydrogen cyanide. Do you know that ammonia levels are up to 20 times higher in marijuana smoke than in tobacco smoke?
Not proven. There's no proven evidence that marijuana smoke causes lung cancer. No proven evidence in it.
You know, Carl, listen to me. Someone defined hell as a place where there is no reason. I am not going to live in hell with you because you have no education. Have a nice day. All right. I don't talk to idiots. I'll talk to an uneducated person who didn't go to college or grad school who can at least reason and listen to facts. But if you give them a fact and they deny it, then they may as well join may as well join ISIS. It's the same mentality. It's the same idiocy. Toxins are more abundant in marijuana than in tobacco. It's been studied over and over again. Ammonia levels 20 times higher in dope. Hydrogen cyanide, HCN. Nitrogen-related chemicals 3 to 5 times higher in dope than in tobacco. The fertilizer used in the marijuana plants, nitrogen-based fertilizer, could have affected the results. That is true. There are certain factors that have to be looked at. But even though marijuana does not contain nicotine and tobacco does not contain cannabinoids, which include THC, marijuana's active ingredient, tobacco, we know, has long been linked to cancer and other health problems. And we know that marijuana smoke per se has not been tied to cancer in the past. However, does it make sense to you to inhale hot smoke into your lungs and not to expect damage done to your lungs? So now the next question is, no, you may say, okay, that's reasonable. I won't smoke marijuana. I'll just ingest it in a brownie. All right, so you're going to ingest it in a brownie. So you're ingesting it to get high, not to cure a disease, right? I mean, if you just wanted to use the active ingredients that alleviate arthritis or multiple sclerosis or any of the other conditions that the people are using it for, why do you need to get high? Why do you need to be addicted to the high as opposed to just using the active principles in marijuana that could help your illness? See, so there's a connection between the getting high here that I don't like, because I think getting high is extremely dangerous in a population in that it tends to make people stupider, not smarter. When you walk around stoned all the time, you start thinking as they do in San Francisco, or the way they think in Berkeley, and they accept virtually anything except nationalism or love for nation. Everything else is acceptable to people who are high all the time. And so it's a very dangerous thing to do, is to be high all the time on something. And to me, the most the best high, by the way, is being straight. That's the highest high there is. It's the toughest one to achieve on a regular basis. It's not the one that's glorified by Harvey Weinstein or Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Ratzenberg. I understand that. But fundamentally, all these movies, every movie today shows a pretty Hollywood slut with a marijuana cigarette after having sex with some fake guy. You know, fake guy, fake girl, having fake sex, smoking fake marijuana, and then having a fake cigarette. And you wonder why children are confused. Well, I'm not confused as to why the children are confused. I know why they're confused. But look, I don't want to see people in prison for smoking marijuana. And I got to tell you again, I speak from personal experience and as a trained scientist with some background in phytochemistry. So I know what I'm talking about, but you don't have to be a genius to go look it up. Look up toxins in marijuana smoke. See what you can find on your own. I think you'd be quite surprised to find out that marijuana is perhaps the most dangerous thing you can put in your body, next to cyanide itself. I don't know why you'd want to do it, but okay, if you want to kill yourself, don't say I didn't warn you. And you know and I know that even though you're using marijuana regularly, let's say, and it's legal now everywhere, most everywhere, you know and I know that because it's largely legalized, you're going to need a bigger kick, and that you're going to start going for the harder drugs as a result. You know it and I know it. It's just the way of human life. But I'd rather not get stuck on the marijuana thing, because if you want to look up toxicants in marijuana, you can do it on your own. And if you don't want to believe it, you don't want to read the research and accept it, I can't help you. There's nothing I can do about that. We're also going to talk about sex addiction on the show, because it's probably the most hidden of all of the addictions. It's one that does not show in public, but it personally destroys lives across the landscape of the world. And I'm talking both pornographic stuff on the internet. And I have very strong feelings that pornography on the internet should be completely outlawed. It should be banned. I think it has poisoned minds and destroyed families more so than anything else in the history of mankind. And I think that the porno industry needs to be controlled by Donald Trump. I doubt very much, given his liberal orientation on so many other issues, that he will even touch this one. I think it's very low on his list, and I agree with the lowness of it, but I think it's definitely an important one. Let's take a couple of quick calls. KVOR, Colorado. Eric, welcome. What's your topic?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, it's about sex addiction, sir.
Go ahead.
I'm a convicted sex offender. I was I basically, I don't use the word addicted anymore through treatment. They kind of told us addiction is kind of means you're shedding blame onto something else and not taking responsibility for your actions. But I was online chatting with females since 1995 through 2009. I was arrested for attempting to meet a 14-year-old in 2008. Basically 6 years. I did 6 years of SOISP probation. I was married. I had a child, and my behavior had gone from, you know, some level of pornography to much extreme, hardcore pornography on the internet, to where I was meeting random, you know, females as much as I could via the internet primarily. For sex, even while married, and had two different wives.
I'm trying to follow you. How did you know that the girl was 14, or were you entrapped?
She told me she was 14, but it was an entrapment situation, kind of like the.
All right, but you know that once she said she was 14, you shouldn't have continued that dialogue. You know that.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's where my thinking had gone. You know, so. You know, obsessed with just meeting anyone, you know, for sex that I could, that, you know, I got to that point.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that I'm not following you. You did this all on the internet, or you'd meet people and go meet them in person?
Both, sir. I used chat sites, internet chat sites for about 19 years, and I would try to meet females in person ultimately, but cyber sex was an early part of it, early on. And, you know, I think the effect of the internet on people's minds, I think, is still kind of raw. The information is kind of raw, and how it affects your mind and how it affects the way you think. But I certainly think there's an impact, almost kind of like a cocaine type of impact, that it stimulates the mind so much. And it wasn't enough anymore to meet, a married 30-year-old female. I needed more tabooism, more of a rush, more of a risk. I needed a lot more to get me to where I, you know, that payoff situation, sir.
So where did it lead you? How did it end?
How did it end? I was arrested in Denver in 2008. I had 5 year probation sentence. I did 6 years. I had to extend my time to get done, but I did 6 years of treatment, sex offender treatment. When you say treatment doesn't work, I agree. It takes a really active participant to engage in that. It probably didn't, you know, I don't think I totally was changed for a couple of years. I think it took me the full 6 years to kind of understand.
But you were being you were in treatment in prison, is that correct? In the prison?
No, sir. I did a little time in jail, but I was on a probation. It's intensive supervised probation for sex offenders.
And today, are you able to avoid the internet?
I am. I was weaned off of it, as it were. It took a while.
All right. So, what substitution therapy did you eventually learn to recondition yourself with?
Well, I was encouraged, and I started to develop friendships in my group. I had a group, a bunch of guys similar to me that did similar things. And so using the phone, talking to guys in my group was really therapeutic, really helpful. Sir, we have to write a lot. You have to write about your entire sexual history, and that takes a long time. I've probably written, handwritten, they make you write by hand, double-spaced, your entire history, going back as far as you can remember, of everything you did having to do with your sexual
history. It might make for an exciting novel.
I don't know if I can compete with yours, but yeah.
Oh, that's no compliment, but thank you anyway. So, Eric, you said you're married now?
I'm not married. I got divorced 3 years ago.
So your wife couldn't take it anymore. You were left alone, so now it's even harder for you, isn't it, that you're alone? Wait a minute. Let's go back. You were married and doing this. Did she know about it?
She didn't know about it. She knew a couple times that I had some affairs, but... she did not know to the extent that I was exhibiting this behavior on the internet and meeting random females. I'd meet them wherever I could, even at our home, while she was gone at work, or, you know, at nighttime while she was asleep, things like that. Very risky.
So you're a highly, highly sexed person, number one. You're tremendous testosterone, tremendous addiction potential. That doesn't go away overnight. So what do you do with all that energy now?
Right. So now I work out 4 days a week because you're right. That's an extreme. You have to fill that void. It doesn't go away. And you use the word cure. What I was taught in treatment is there is no cure. You're never cured. It's not a sickness. It's a behavior. And so you're taught, we're taught these things called thinking errors, which are ways to kind of manipulate your own mind and other people to try to make certain behaviors you know aren't okay to make them okay. So you're that's blaming or minimizing the effect you have.
And I understand from having read a lot about this that people set themselves up to fall into their own trap by getting depressed and anxious in order to relieve that depression or anxiety. They then revert to their addiction. Is that a pattern that you found to be true?
Yes, sir, that's true. It's part of our...
Hold on 1 minute, I'll be back. I find this fascinating, especially around holiday times when people are binging on their addictions. This is the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Are you a pot addict? Are you an alcoholic addict? Are you a sex addict? I mean, you probably have a problem. If you're listening to talk radio, I can guarantee you you're a troubled soul. Let's put it to you that way. You're probably a political addict. This is an addiction. Talk radio is a two-way addiction. The talker is addicted to talking, and the listener is addicted to listening. And I can assure you, most of you listen to talk radio all day long. You can't stop listening to talk radio. It's an addiction. It's probably the most addictive of all of the mediums out there. It's more addictive than television in some ways because it's more personal. I know when I'm off the air, what am I going to do? Not listen to the media? So I watch movies. I don't listen to talk radio because I found 20 years ago I learned a real trick that no matter who you're listening to, you subconsciously start to imitate them or pick them up. And you can hear it in other shows because a lot of people listen to me and then they ridicule my show for an hour straight and then make believe they're not listening to me. So I don't listen to other shows. What's the point of it? You lose your originality. All you do is copy others. So I don't do that. But I want to know what you do with your addiction. I got callers that you're not going to believe hanging on the line. And this is the kind of show I want to do today, in addition to the latest breaking news, which I will do for you, as well as tell you about the God book I am writing and why.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Coded in my genes is the desire to answer the questions I've asked since I was conscious. And the questions are universal. We've all asked them. And it drives people to crazy extremes, these questions. And the more questions that you have along these lines, the more likely you are to be an addict of some kind. There's no question about it. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a holy man, obviously. I'm not even a guru. I could pretend to be all three if I wanted to be. But what have you asked yourself if you're conscious since you were able to think on your own? Why was I put here? Why were you put on this earth? Why are we born if we're born to die? Why must we suffer? Why does God forsake even the good amongst us? Why do little children suffer so terribly in cancer wards around the world? Why are so many good men and women slaughtered in war? Why do we see evil men thrive, unpunished in their lifetimes? Now, these questions have plagued me to the extent that I myself lost my faith many times along the long road of life. It's a rocky road that we walk on, but we all must keep on walking. No matter how our feet bleed, no matter how they ache, we keep on walking. And we all seek answers in our own way. I found answers in my own way, and you probably found answers in your way. But along the way, many of you have found ways to avoid asking the questions. The questions that drip on you like a drill in your head. These are the questions that very few people can find an answer for. And it makes people pretty crazy. And so some become more religious. Some throw religion away altogether. Some rush into drugs or alcohol or sex. Whatever it may be. But people are basically trying to bang themselves against the envelope that limits our knowledge. There's an envelope around our knowledge. And no matter who you are, you're not getting through that envelope. There are clairvoyants who claim that they can see around through the envelope. I don't know. I've met a few who maybe they see things. I've seen things happen in my lifetime that told me there are people who can see. I've told the story many times, and I don't want to repeat it over and over again. I'll give you one example. Then we're going to go back to the addiction story, because the people who are addicted generally have the highest consciousness. I know you don't think that's true. It's a paradox of what you may think. But a lot of the people who become addicts are super intelligent people. Not all, don't get me wrong, not the crack lady with the teeth in the street, but who knows what she was before. But she was driven by something to end that pain of questioning. She couldn't take one more second of not knowing what the hell this is all about. So she took that first crack pipe. Or she got into that group sex for the first time, and then she couldn't get out of it. She couldn't find a way out of it. So this is the human condition. I mean, it's not sad. It's just the road that we're on. And I want to walk down that road with you a little bit today for a couple of reasons. One, because I've always been intrigued by these questions, number one, ever since I've been a little boy. And secondly, I'm only focused on writing the God book right now. I'm writing another secret book on politics, which I cannot tell you about, but I will after the first of the year. And it's very, very good. And I guarantee you're going to love it. But next year, next October, the God book will be out. That'll be it. It's the last thing I've got to do. It's my last will and testament, this book. And it goes, for one reason I'm writing that book on the God book, is to pay back. What can I say to you, God, okay? What is God? Many of you don't know. What is God? Who's God? What God? Does it exist? How can you believe in God and in a godless time? With an atheistic president, with an atheistic administration, an atheistic universe that we live in. It's a personal decision. In that sense, it's faith. That's what faith is. Faith is something you believe in without proof. That's what faith is. In other words, if you're an absolutist and a rationalist who has to have proof for everything that you do, which is what most of us are, in the world in which we live, it's almost impossible to have faith in an invisible God. Is that right or wrong? And then when you look at the horrors in the world that hit people for no reason, the Christian school bus that goes off a cliff and all the kids die, while the pornographers fly in their Gulf Streams high overhead. I mean, what are you going to do about it? It's hard to compute all of this at once. And so the question is, how do you stop the questioning? That's your problem, not mine. My purpose in doing the show today is simply to expose the listeners to all the people out there who are suffering just like the listeners are, but never talk about it. And we all suffer to a certain extent in some way or another. And I think by listening to others who have gotten really, really bad as a result of the questioning and the answers that they found were wrong, it may help you in some way. That's what I'm talking about. And I especially want to help the young people who are lied to out there in thinking that marijuana is the salvation. And I keep saying to you, it is the most dangerous of all drugs because it is highly addictive. Don't let anyone fool you. Marijuana is a highly addictive drug. And don't think I'm justifying drinking alcohol because I'm putting you into the reality zone of what marijuana is. No, I'm not doing that at all. But I want you to understand that it's not the benign little holy weed that you're being told it is by all of the politicians right now who once opposed it. They see a big payday to legalize marijuana. Okay? which, by the way, is one of the only justifications for decriminalizing marijuana, not legalizing it. There's a huge difference between legalizing, decriminalizing, and promoting. And we have to find that ground, and we're not on it yet. We've gone from demonizing marijuana to glorifying marijuana. Again, America in the extreme. It's either one thing or the other. There's almost no reason anymore. There's no balanced reasoning in anything. It's either one or the other. But just understand that marijuana is highly addictive, number one. Number two, it has many toxicants in it that are far worse than are found in tobacco smoke. And I'll give you another reminder that you may not know about. You know where the word assassin comes from? Just the word assassin. You know where it comes from? It comes from the Arabic. It is related to the word for hashish. In fact, all of the assassins in Arabia centuries ago smoked hashish before going out on their murder sprees. Did you know that? Hashash and hassassin are the same derivation. I'm not saying that everyone who smokes dope is going to kill you, but I got to tell you, it releases certain impulses in people that can be very deadly. So having said that, we can talk about this. We can talk about sex addiction. I don't see any great news out there, and I'm not going to talk about every burp that comes from the Trump camp. Is he giving the speech yet, Robert? Did I miss that in the first hour? Has he given the speech? Did I miss the whole thing? Yes? Oh, good. Thank God. I was going to run it, but thank God. Was there anything in it I haven't heard before? We're going to make America great again. We did make America great again. We have made America great again. We're on the road to making America great again. Well, he did. He saved 1,000 jobs at the carrier plant, which is making that community great again. So what do you want? That's all. He did a good job. Maybe this is the beginning of something big. But I don't think it's that interesting to talk about. KSFO Radio, Peter, line 6, what's your topic?
Hey, how you doing, Michael? This is Peter. I used to be a waiter at your famous restaurant you used to go to on the wharf a long time ago. I used to take care of your wife, and it's an honor to be on the show.
Wait, you were down in Alioto's?
Yes, I used to take care of for Boston. You used to ask about my mother all the time. And
I haven't been there in 10 years. I stopped going there. When Joey died, I never went back.
That's when I waited on you. I was actually waiting on you the last night when you left, and it was a whole disaster, and Joe asked...
Oh, yeah, well, leave it to me. Every restaurant I go in lasts only a few years, and then I have an argument with the owner, and I never go back.
That was...
Okay, but so, wait, you were... I don't remember. What'd you look like?
Italian, from Boston, used to ask me about my mother all the time, and I really appreciated that.
Were you a tall Italian or a small Italian? Were you a thin Italian, a fat Italian, dark Italian, light Italian? What do you look like?
I'm a good-looking Italian. I think I might have a short haircut or shaved head at the time, but you always liked the seafood sausage, and I used to have a great...
Yeah. Well, okay, I did. I haven't been there in 10 years, and I don't intend to start going there again. But, Peter, tell me, why are you calling? What's your topic tonight?
I'm talking about the very important talk that you brought up about sex addiction, and it also ties into drug addiction. So, you know, the porn industry, you hit it right on the head, is destroying America. It's destroying the values of family and marriage and everything, and you look at how big it's developed, and just insidiously going inside. You know, women are glorified. There's strippers. Is it being okay to be a stripper, going to prostitution, pimps, human trafficking, goes on, you know, and... it's really sad. For me, I was 8 years old when I almost had sex with my babysitter. I was just, and I didn't do it because I was afraid. I didn't know what it was all about. Then I saw my first Hustler mag a year or two later. I was like, oh, man, what an idiot I was. Then I got to porn, and porn was like, I had arrived. You know, I was like, this is what I'm all about. And I started to get attractive. I remember before high school, girls said, you're going to be good looking when you're ugly. I was, oh, great, not now. And they were, and I did. I became.
Wait. They used to say you could be good looking when you're ugly.
When I was ugly, when I was, you know, developing in pre-teens, you know, I was underdeveloped and, you know, not very. I wasn't the jock type. I wasn't developed yet, skinny, scrawny, and all that. But a girl looked over at me and she says, "You're going to be good looking one day." And then I did, and I was very insecure and very, you know, felt afraid when I was a kid and never got in round with the popular. But then as I got older into the world, I started to get women started attracting me, and I felt that I was important. It gave me self-esteem that a girl would want my attention. And for me, that was it. When I fed off that like an addiction. And I had sex with a lot of women. I got involved in the restaurant industry. and it was just a pool for me. You know, a good-looking guy with not a lot going on resume. I was terrible, but I had good looks and I was charming, and I found to get with women, and that was that my whole being was to be with women.
So, so are you still a sex addict? How many women have you been with in your life?
Well over 700 at least. You know.
Oh my God! And you serving my seafood sausage? Why didn't you tell me at that time?
Yeah, I wore gloves. I wore gloves. You know.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. Well, man, now that I know, I can see why I stopped going there. So, but why are you, Peter? Why are you calling tonight? What is it that motivated you to publicly shame yourself? Are you boasting, or are you ashamed of it? What is it?
Not boasting. I just I understand myself. You know, my mother passed away a couple years ago. I did some really huge soul searching, and realized addiction. Drugs go into play too, because you know drugs only you know intensify the sexual desires and so forth, and it gets pretty insidious. And I can't have a normal relationship with a woman I love. You know, I could be with a woman I care about, or I cuddle with her, but sexual interest is just not there, and that really makes it very difficult to have a healthy relationship when a girl doesn't.
We could say you're a. But wait a minute. So you are a classic Lothario. You're a born. Not everyone's made to be married, by the way. Number one, but number two. So you're not that miserable that you're a single guy, are you?
No, I mean I wasn't miserable. I mean I went through the stages of addiction, you know, and I agree with you. Marijuana is a gateway. You know, marijuana led me to cocaine with girls and peer pressure, and then on to more crazy lifestyle. It was the lifestyle I led of being with women, getting messed up, and you know, not really caring about myself or putting myself in a position where I cared about Peter and getting ahead in life. It was more about.
So what does Peter do now? Are you still in the restaurant business?
No. I after my mom passed away, like I said, did some soul searching. I went into treatment and counseling. I learned a lot about my behaviors, as the former caller spoke about, and about I give. I work for the VA. I help others in spinal cord injury and polytrauma. And I think volunteering, being a part of that, helping other people, get you out of yourself, as it has me. You speak for me, and I don't try and look for that. I don't look for that rush anymore. I don't need that.
But Peter, what do you do for a living now?
So I do recreational therapy at the VA hospital in Palo Alto.
And so you actually went 100% into the giving world. You took all of that energy and turned it into a giving.
Yeah, and I help other veterans in the homeless program, and I give.
That's amazing. Well, you sound like a really great guy. I'm glad you're serving my seafood sausage with gloves on. Peter, stay on the line. I want to ask you one more question about your sex addiction, because maybe you can help someone else with their problem. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. No way out of it. There's just no way out. No matter what you do, you can bang against the walls, you're not going to get there. The less you struggle on the hook, the better your life will be. I'm very pragmatic about this whole metaphysical question of why are we here, does God exist, da, da, da. The more you struggle with it, the worse it gets. And we're talking about addiction, and many people who are very, very highly intelligent, forget about book learning or degrees, just a high IQ, highly inquisitive nature. It doesn't matter your ethnic background, it doesn't matter how you talk, just people who have very high IQs tend to get addicted more so than other people. Peter, on KSFO, tell me something. As a sex addict, what would you advise to the people listening who may feel that they're trapped and can't get out of it? What should they do?
Well, you got to be honest with yourself first and foremost. You know, you have to say, you know, what kind of life do I want to live? You know, do I want to live in a day-to-day? Do I want to be in control of my life, or do I want my impulses to control me? That's really what it comes down to.
That's very clear. That is very, very clear. Do I want to be in control of my life, or do I want my impulses to control me? How did you come to that, Peter?
Well, I mean, I read. You know, I've always been a reader, self-learned, and, you know, you got to ask for help. But, you know, the only difference between us and every other creature on the planet is our ability to reason. And so if we're not reasoning, thinking things out, then we're just, you know, existing. And
amazing. Well, Peter, I can tell you this, having been on this show, and it's very nice to hear from you. I haven't seen you forever. I can guarantee you that if you wanted to have 700 more women, you could have them right now, because you probably made a lot of new friends on the show today. That's the absolute truth. Peter, thanks for the call. Women love men who have sensitivity and intelligence like him, don't you think? Compared to the oafs out there.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Many people have been addicted to this show for 20 years, some for 20 days, some for 20 minutes. And some things in life are addictive, including talk radio. It can be very addictive. That's a healthy addiction. I mean, there are very healthy addictions, let's be clear. I think this is one of them. And if you can express ideas or listen to others expressing ideas, tell me what's wrong with that. Even if you disagree with me politically, you listen to a guy who you disagree with, eventually you say, you know what, he's not 100% wrong, maybe I'm wrong. And you start to open your mind up. So that's the beauty of talk radio. It's the greatest medium for me to express my ideas instantaneously, for that matter. And another reason I'm addicted to talk radio, since we're talking about addictions, I mean, I've been thinking about it, is it enables me to test the acuity of my mind all the time, in real time. Because when you start to slip in this business, you'll know it before your listeners will. Let me tell you that. And that's when you have to get off the stage. And I can tell you right now, my mind is sharper than it ever has been, sharper than when I was 30. My ability to formulate thoughts and express the thoughts is good, and I know it, and that's why I enjoy doing it. And the day I can no longer walk the high wire, you'll know about it because I won't be here. You know? I'm going to tell you that right now. So I just want to say thanks for being here. So we're talking about addictions, and I want to take a few more calls on it, then I'm going to go into a few other topics. Sean on KBOI Radio. Welcome on line three. Sean, what's on your mind?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know that 10 years ago, I molested my daughter, and I went to prison 10 years later when it was known to my family, and I went to prison for a year, and I went to a treatment program called what they call a writer, and so I learned a lot, and
Did you say you lost your daughter or you molested your daughter?
I molested my stepdaughter.
Okay, what does that mean? What did you do to her? I mean, without getting too graphic.
I just had her touch me, and so.
How many years did you go to prison for that?
I was in prison for a year, but I was doing what they call a rider, which is an assessment on how well you will do in outside treatment. So I successfully...
Frankly, I didn't know the law was that lenient, I'll be honest with you. I didn't know that they had categories of punishment. I didn't know. I thought it was like they threw the book at you automatically.
Well, they did at my arraignment. It was 60 years. And
oh.
I completed the rider, I would be... And this happened in 10 years ago, and I just got out of prison recently. So,
what message would you give to people out there who are as seriously screwed up as you are?
Well, I'm not screwed up now. I was then. I just want to say that treatment's good, and it improves relationships, and it improves your decision making. There's covert.
But Sean, I'm not here to make you uncomfortable, but you did call a national show on sex addiction. You did admit that you molested a daughter, a stepdaughter. That's pretty terrible stuff. Can you honestly say to my audience right now that you're still not attracted to children, or is that, how do you deal with that?
I'm not at all. I quit on my own and was moving on, and I raised her. She had no mother. And her mother left, so I was raising her on my own with the help of my parents. And
you took advantage of a vulnerability. You know that.
Yes. And
all right. Well, look, I'm not here to sit in judgment. God knows I'm the most imperfect person that you could imagine. I'm not a godlike figure sitting here to judge you. I just say, you know, be very careful, Sean, because I don't know by what I've read that it's easy to just walk away from that.
No, it's not. And I have, you know, strict rules, of course. But I have succeeded in treatment really well so far.
Okay, so what your main purpose of calling is to disagree with me and say the treatment did help you. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, it did, because, I mean, I can...
All right, well, that's important. That's important. As a guy looking from the outside in, I tend to think a lot of treatment is BS. When I see a guy like Anthony Weiner, they send him away to a treatment facility, rides a horse and takes a hike and he's cured. I don't believe it. After 6 weeks, I think he's still got that problem.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, thank you. There's nothing, I mean, what am I going to do, make a joke of it? I'm going to make a joke of a guy and what he did to the child? The child will never be sane. The damage he did to the child is forever, to be honest with you. You molest the child, you ruin the child forever. You steal their innocence. You know what that means? When a child is molested, their innocence is stolen from them forever. They are ruined forever. So forget about the molester. Think about the child and what it does to them. So, look, in the middle of all of this, I'm going to take your calls on all these other topics. I just got to show you what I'm, you know, it's December, so I'm reading books again. I have time after the successful publication of Scorched Earth and Teddy and Me, which I hope you'll check out for the holidays. I ordered a bunch of books. Look what I'm reading now. Pax Romana, War, Peace, and Conquest in the Roman World by Adrian Goldsworthy. Okay. Redeeming the Kama Sutra by Wendy Doniger. I told you about that one yesterday. The Plots Against Hitler by Danny Orbach. Hitler Ascent, 1889 to 1939 by Volker Ulrich. That's a big one, by Knopfe. That's only 800 pages. Now, I doubt that I'll read all of the books for all of the pages, but I'll read some of the books for some of the pages. At the same time, I'm reading magazines. One of my favorite is Military History. So the most recent issue is on the 101st Airborne Paratrooper Fight for Carentan. Knights versus Muslims at Akko. That's in Israel, if you don't know what it is, ACRE. The ME-262, Hitler's jet fighter. It's fascinating material, I got to tell you. And I especially like looking at the photographs in the Military History magazine. And you see the men in World War II, U.S. Airmen, 101st Airborne, for example, or the ordinary foot soldier. They're the faces of the Eddie of today. The boys are still in the military. The only difference is they're not being led by women who have never fired a gun, or by women who have never flown a plane, or by women who have never really piloted a ship. That was the difference between then and now. That was why every man was able to defeat Superman. And that is why Donald Trump will save America. If he does just that, it'll be enough for me. I got to tell you that. In a minute, I'll come back to all these other topics, but I want to go to some callers. Barry on WDRC in Connecticut, line 8. Go ahead. What's your topic?
You were talking about marijuana addiction. Well, I agree with you. My brother, my younger brother, okay, he's 48 years old. He's in hospice. 3 heart valve transplants. He's now at stage 4 throat and tongue cancer. Smoked marijuana for 30 years. Very smart guy. Scholarship to a Catholic high school in Connecticut. Mm. Also, too, he had scholarship to Fordham University. Went there after 2 years, dropped out, remained a bum his whole life. Why? Addicted to pot.
Well, it's as simple as that. It's as cut and dried of what you just said. And I think you wanted people to hear that this is not the benign drug that the government is suddenly peddling all of a sudden.
Smoked 10, 12 joints a day. Something's going to happen. And he never smoked cigarettes. So the doctor told him it was the pot that did it. Because if he would have smoked cigarettes, he said you probably would have been up to like 3-4 packs a day and you would have had lung cancer by now. And he said it's all addictions will kill you.
Yeah, well, that's true. So he got tongue cancer and 3 heart valve
Stage 4, both. He's in hospice right now. He's got about a month.
And you're pretty sure it was the marijuana that did it?
Well, 3 doctors, one of them from Memorial Sloan, another one from Mount Sinai, all said it's the pot.
Well, I wish some more of these stories got out there before the young people are taken in and hooked in into thinking that it's a benign herb that God put on the planet for them to enjoy.
Damn.
All right, Barry, let me send you Teddy and Me. It's a sweet book, and I don't think you'll get addicted to it, frankly. I haven't yet talked about the other mag. I like to buy magazines around holiday times. I mean, you get ready for trips, right? So the Military History is like a heavy magazine. Then I like Hemming's Motor News. I like to read Flying Magazine, even though I'm not a pilot. I love Flying Magazine. I love to see the new planes. I love to see stories. Well, there's stories in there about usually they have in the back plane crashes and what caused it. I mean, I don't read it out of a macabre sense. It's just interesting. you know, still, we take so much for granted. We get up in an airplane. To me, it's still a miracle. I don't know if it's the same for most people. Maybe I retain this childlike view of the world where when I go up, when I get in an airplane, you want to hear something funny? I still say a prayer before I take off. I'm not flying it. I have a little prayer card. I take it out. Maybe people think I'm crazy. I actually read the prayer about prayer for a traveler. And I make the little prayer. You know what I say? That's the way it is. What am I going to do? In other words, this is how I am genetically encoded to be the way I am at this point. I'm going to put that prayer card in the God book. People should see the actual prayer, what it is. It's very simple. And it's very comforting. It's all about peace and bringing peace and finding peace on your journey. Would you believe that? It's not even asking God to save you from a plane crash. It doesn't say may the fan jets continue to twirl to spin. I got to get the prayer card right after the next break. It's very simple. Oh, we got some good callers here. Sex addiction therapist Nancy on KSFO. Go ahead, line six.
Yes. I just wanted to say that there's a big difference between problematic sexual behavior. There's a whole addiction cycle that people go through when they have an addiction. They have a criteria such as loss of time, ignorant amount of money spent, loss of job, loss of relationship. So there's a big criteria plus the whole idea of an addictive cycle, their belief system, their impaired thinking, and then on to preoccupation and sexual compulsivity. So I just wanted to make that point.
Nancy, how do you begin treatment for people? What is it, group first? Is it group therapy first?
When people come to me, generally what I do is we talk about what we call a three-circle exercise, which talks about what the problem is, what are the triggers, and what are tools that we can put in place. So we actually put in physical tools. We don't put the computer in our bedroom anymore. We have it out in the incident. We have somebody who possibly we clean our phone, and then we possibly have somebody who monitors our phone. So there's a whole actual physical thing that you do because of the addiction, it actually, as you know, changes the neural pathways.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be moved back. Well, it takes...
So how do you satisfy the neural pathways once the item is removed from that individual, in this case, pornography? What do you replace it with?
Right. So you have them do things like they do an impact letter with their partner. So they talk about everything that they've done, and they get that kind of out in the open. And then they start to work on some of the childhood issues that were, you know, what is your sexual history, right? Where did this happen? Did this happen when you were 8 years old? Because it's a lot different than if it started when you were 18 or 25, right?
Mm.
So, you know.
I agree. It's not my field of learning, but I'm listening to you as an expert. Are you saying in a sense that you're sort of a Freudian in that regard, that it all goes back to childhood?
No, I don't think so. It can be, there's a genetic component where people have addictions, and some people start out with, they have alcoholism in their family, but they reject that, but they still have that, that genetic component that says, I have something that can addict me. For some people, I've even known a woman who was addicted to hot chocolate, so we all have a pleasure center.
Well, I know that there are a lot of people addicted to chocolate, that's for sure. It can't be as dangerous as pornography, can it?
Yeah. So we have, you know, we have this...
I mean, if you give a woman a choice between being addicted to hot chocolate and sex, certainly you wouldn't reject the hot chocolate, would you?
Well, you know, these people are in emotional and physical pain. You know, men can become impotent with too much masturbation to pornography. But they don't think about that. These 20-somethings that come in and they have impotence problems and they can't figure it out. Well, there you go. You know, you can only set off the firing so long, and then pretty soon it starts to fail.
Wow. So where do you practice? Where's your practice located, Nancy?
I'm in San Jose.
You want to give out your name? And go ahead. I don't care. Give it out. Maybe many people would like to have your services. It'd be my pleasure to help people. How do they reach you?
It's Nancy Roberts, Roberts, hyphen Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, and my website is nightpsychotherapy.com.
Nightpsychotherapy.com. Well, thank you for being on the program, The Michael Savage Show. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, we're back on the program with very, very little time, and we're talking about the holiday addictions that are out there that are under the surface of the dingling bells and the shopping feet, the festivals. And, you know, it's under the surface. It's the human condition. And I've got such great callers hanging line right now, from religious people to people who have been addicted or are addicted. And they want to all talk. And I hope you'll stay on the line for the next hour, because I think people want to hear what you have to say. WFTL Steve, 1 minute or less. What is your topic, please?
Dr. Savage, it's in the case of tolerance versus truth, and our society and everything has gotten where we tolerate anything. And basically, if you look at pornography, it's basically everywhere, so you're right in that. But you take the fact that young girls, they're basically going on the assumption that if I'm sexy, that I can get what I want. And to the male, I mean, I would love to, I'll tell you, I'm not addicted, but I'm impacted. And whether, you know, it's just very difficult to...
So, Steve, you're saying don't regulate porn or do regulate porn?
Boy, that's a tough one because of freedom, but I believe that that's one of those that you have to. It's everywhere.
So do I. I think pornography needs to be reined in. I think it's gotten out of control. I remember when it happened. It belongs back in the dirty bookstores, not on the Internet. And a sane society recognizes that the ready availability of this filth poisons a nation's mind and soul. That's it. There's nothing more I can say. We need to go back, not forward. Not all progress is positive.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Man, I'm a dead fan, yeah. All the people whose lives were ruined by that slob with a guitar. High on cocaine in the main vein. No wonder they voted for Hillary Clinton to the 98th percentile here in Marin County. They worship drug peddlers, pornographers, whatever. I am not a progressive, in case you haven't noted that yet. In that regard, you can call me a regressive. In fact, I may start a new party in a year or so called the National Regressive Party. I'd like to turn the clock backwards, where America, for an America that it was safe to walk to the store at night to buy a soda without getting mugged. Welcome to the program. We're talking about topics that I want to renew them. So let me begin this hour in another way. I know many of you have been holding because you have got a lot to say about addiction, sex addiction mainly. We're getting a lot of that today. So I told you that I'm working on a God book, and it's a year out, so it's not like I'm selling you a book, so don't turn the channel off already. But one of the passages in my Bible that I keep going back to is called An Eye for an Eye. And what's important about reading the Old Testament, even if you're a Christian who follows the New Testament or the Testament of Christians, you should understand that your Bible is derived from the Old Testament, because Jesus was a rabbi in plain English. He lived by these laws. And all of the Muslims in America, whether you like it or not, they're here. They're not going anywhere. And they practice Islam. They read a holy book that is based to a great extent upon the Old Testament, and many of the most traditional or conservative, if you want to put it that way, Muslims are following the same rules that you find in the Old Testament. And that's why you see some of these things going on, for example, in Saudi Arabia. They catch a thief, they cut the hand off. Now, where does that come from? It comes from the Jewish Bible of an eye for an eye. And it comes out of Exodus, which is, and if a man smite the eye of his bondman, or the eye of his bondwoman, and destroy it, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. And if he smite out his bondman's tooth, or his bondwoman's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. That's an interesting one. And there are many, many other things in there that I'm not going to read to you. You can read it for yourself if you want. But it all comes from the common law that we, as we know, it comes from the Bible. Did you know that? People don't understand it, that even the most atheistic lawyer listening to the show should know that your law is derived primarily from biblical passages. If an ox gore a man or a woman that they die, the ox shall be surely stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be quit. But if the ox was wont to gore in time past, and warning hath been given to its owner, and he hath not kept it in, but it hath killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. See, that goes to the pit bull owners out there, for example. Oh, he's friendly. Oh, he's friendly. Why is it off a leash growling at my groin on a trail? I see, you know, this does go, well, it's friendly till it tears your groin off. That's all. So we need more fundamentalist rules in this country. I'm sorry. When I see in San Francisco this morning that 66,000 warrants were thrown in the garbage by these liberal psycho judges and lawyers because they say, oh, you're enforcing a law on poor people who can't pay the fine. The guy peed in the street in front of women and children, and you're going to let him go? Or he defecated in a mailbox? That's not a crime to you, judge? Or he slept on the sidewalk? No, I'm sorry. If there was punishment, then you wouldn't see this repetitive behavior. It's like a nasty child. Unless you teach the child right from wrong, the child will continue to do wrong. It's the same with the hobos, the bums in the streets. You need laws and you need law enforcement. And these judges are the problem, not the homeless people. The judges need to be thrown out of the city, not the homeless bums. And so in that sense, you can call me a regressive if you want, because I'm certainly not a progressive. No, I don't like grown men taking their private parts out in the street and urinating in front of families on Fisherman's Wharf. I'm sorry, I'm a little old-fashioned in that regard. I'm just a little old-fashioned in that regard. And no, I don't like seeing bums defecating on a sidewalk and using newspaper to wipe themselves. I'm sorry, I'm a little old-fashioned. I'm not that progressive. I don't live in Berkeley. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm more of an Old Testament guy than I am anything else. I mean, you wanted me to tell you where my beliefs lie, they lie back there. No, I'm not a biblical absolutist, or else I'd be stoned to death. So you have to be a little careful in what you're saying, and you have to be careful in your interpretation of the biblical passages. And you say, well, where do you draw the limit? Now, that's the problem that theologians have been facing from the beginning. You speak to religious people. To them, anyone who is a reformist is an apostate, whether it be in the Jewish religion or in the Muslim religion, primarily not so much in the Christian religions, because Christianity itself is a reformist religion. Christianity itself went through the Middle Ages and came out a different religion. They don't put people on the rack anymore, so far as I know. But if you speak to a very religious Muslim who you bring in from, let's say, Somalia, and they're living in the 7th or 8th century, they're the ones who are causing the trouble, because they're interpreting their holy book literally. They don't understand they're not living in the 7th century in Somalia. Oh, they like the Benjamins and the free housing and the free medical that we give them, but they don't like the laws of the land very much. See, they want it both ways. The same can be said for Orthodox Jews. Many of them practice the Old Testament up to a certain degree. They're certainly not stoning adulterers, so far as I know, nor are they stoning homosexuals, so far as I know. But by and large, they say you cannot modify God's law. You cannot modify anything that's in the Bible because God said it. That's a problem. How do you argue with someone who says God said it? You can't argue with them. You see, that's the higher authority. So what we've done is we create a humane society where we say, no, I'm sorry, sir, but we live in a humanistic society. You're free to practice your religion so long as you do no harm to others. You know, go in good health, do what you want to do, but don't tell us what to do. That's the way it's come down here in America, and you know all of this. Unfortunately, we have individuals that Obama's been bringing in who don't get that lesson on the airplane over. That's sort of the problem we have. Like, you know, occasionally the guy might have a little problem, and they take his car and jump up on his curb and run children over at a college, as happened in Ohio State the other day, and then run out with the knife and scream, "Kill the infidel." He didn't get the lesson on the airplane over from the homeland, and no one told him not. It's not a good thing to do to run people over and stab them to death in the name of your God. He didn't get that message in the holy land where he came from. I love all the imams. Don't know him. They never saw him. Never heard of him. They heard he was there. They never saw him. They don't know who he is. All of a sudden, the Somalis in Ohio, they were flooded in by Obama. They never heard of him. They don't know who Atan is. They never saw him in the mosque. They never heard of him. He's a stranger to us. No one saw him. He's a stranger. He never said a word. We heard he's a nice guy, but we don't really know him. No imam had anything to do with him. And that's terrific. They don't know him. All of a sudden, that's terrific. Where'd he come from? No one knew him. He was brought in here with six siblings on welfare by Mr. Obama. Yeah, six of them on welfare. They're all going to be upstanding citizens. Don't worry about it. This was just a lone wolf. He didn't get it. He came out of the air, his ideas. He's crazy. He's deranged. He's a maniac. He's a lunatic. No, he isn't. He was actually following his holy book to the nth degree. It says to do the things he did. So this is the problem that we have. This is the problem that Trump has, is that if you want to talk about politics, Donald Trump ran on a very strict set of campaign promises. Did you expect all of them? If so, you're rather naive to be followed, that he'd follow all of them. But how much of it do you think we're going to get? I don't know. If he closes the border, if he stops the flood coming in, if he rebuilds the military, if he gets the police empowered again and gets the bums who are attacking the police disempowered again, if he lowers taxes slightly, that alone would be enough for me, I got to tell you right now. Just the stronger military and stronger police presence would be enough for me, and the border being closed, you know. Of course I'd like lower taxes, but by what I'm seeing from this guy Munchen, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, Munch? How could you pronounce his name M-N? It's not even M-U-N. Munchen would be understandable, M-U-N-C-H-I-N. But you catch yourself every time you say Munch. How could you have a silent M with an N following it? Where'd the name come from? No disrespect to the incoming Treasury Secretary from Goldman Sachs, Mr. Munchen. How do you pronounce it, Robert? Mr. Munchen? Mr. Munchen? Mr. Munchen? Hi, Mr. Munchen. How are you? Mr. and Mrs. Harold Munchen. Mr. Munchen and Mrs. Munchen. I'd like you to meet the President of the United States. Hello, Mr. Munchen. Hello, Mrs. Munchen. And so that's the story as it goes. 855-47282 is the phone number. We can talk about so many of these topics, and I'd like to get you to call, frankly. So let us take the calls. KSFO. KSFO, Wendy, or KKOH in Reno. Reno, let's go to Reno. Steve on line four, what's on your mind, Steve?
My son had addiction to marijuana. He was kind of a heavy user for 10 years. He ended up attempting to take his life about a year ago. And it was extreme psychosis. They said it was a UC Davis, and they said it was the worst case of a suicide attempt they'd ever seen for someone to survive. And came to realize that there's an epidemic with marijuana addiction and pot addiction that is creating an epidemic of health, mental health issues across the nation. And the doctors kind of informed me that they've been seeing more and more of these cases. And you know, the research that we did and stuff earlier on, the media saying there's no problem with marijuana. It's like smoking cigarettes, or it's like drinking alcohol or whatever. And I think the states are being blinded to the revenue that they're receiving.
Of course they are. They're not doing science. They're not doing medicine. They're just looking at the fiscal impact, which is an important one. I'd rather see the money going in the hands of the tax base rather than in the hands of the drug dealer. But unfortunately, you and I both know the government will steal the money anyway. You think that money will go for repairing a road or doing anything that people need? They'll steal the money right out of the kitty. But, you know, you raised an interesting point about marijuana and mental health and the epidemic of anxiety that is prevailing in America today. The fact is that marijuana smoking today, or ingestion of marijuana in any form, is greatly increasing anxiety and depression in the population. And that is leading to events such as the tragedy of your son trying to commit suicide. I think that is something you would agree with, Steve.
It's just horrific. And, you know, he's getting his life back together, but it's... You know, it's been a process, and it just was devastating. You know,
but did the marijuana induce anxiety in them? Because a lot of people smoke marijuana, and they get very nervous. Their hands sweat. They have these paranoid feelings about everybody. That's psychosis. That's a borderline psychotic reaction. You know that.
Hearing voices. He was thinking the government was coming after him. He just, you know, it was extreme paranoia. And
I saw all of that in the East Village when I was young and I was a marijuana smoker. I hung around with it. I smoked marijuana. I saw that in all the people I knew. The CIA was planting stuff in their houses. They heard voices. They heard noises. Everything that's going around was gone. But the marijuana today is 20 times stronger than it was then. That makes it's like having an LSD trip every time they smoke a joint now.
Unbelievable.
Horrible, horrible. Thanks, Steve. It's a terrible thing to hear, but maybe it's enlightening for some people who are listening. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. You a deadhead man? Cool. And Jerry Garcia's a god. Go lick his guitar in Marin County somewhere. All right, that's the world I live in. I'm not going to change anything. I helped elect the president, but other than that, I did nothing in my life. That's all. So there it is. Here we are, and we're talking about other topics, because I'm not going to talk about every burp and this and that and go into it. You want to do it? Go ahead and do it. Radio is wonderful. Look at the power that we're having today. We're hearing from people who have suffered or lost as a result of addictions, and they're sharing it. Maybe it'll stop someone from a bad road. I don't know. We hope so. And this whole business of mine depends upon the radio stations I am on and the advertisers, to be honest with you. It doesn't come free of charge. Interesting. I just got a, I'm not going to read it, but I just got a proposal from the director of sales for the company. If I'd like to read ads for a local business for a funeral home. Sure, why not? Well, it fits right into today's show. I can't wait to do this one. It's in Boca Raton, no less. Why not? People die. You have to know which funeral home to go to. I'm looking forward to it. It's the way it's, you know, it's the last hurrah for everybody. So you may as well go for it. WKZO in Michigan. Suzanne on line 9. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Hi.
Yes.
So I can't give you the link right now. I'm in the car, but recently reading about some brain scans and when marijuana users are, when they're using the marijuana, the hippocampus region of the brain has a very decreased blood flow. And so the hippocampus is actually responsible, it's believed to be responsible for memory, emotion, and the autonomic nervous system.
So is the hippocampus related to being a hippie or what?
Oh, no. The hippocampus are like some...
No, come on. I'm just joking. Of course I've read Anatomy of the Brain. But what's your main point?
No, so when we see... You just mentioned people sweating, you know, the nervousness, et cetera, the anxiety. That's your autonomic nervous system, those symptoms that kick in. Okay.
Oh, when people smoke pot and their hands sweat and they get nervous, their heart beats.
Yeah. So actually, on these brain scans, okay, you can see this, you know, this restriction of blood flow to these areas. So,
You're saying marijuana restricts blood flow to those areas.
So when you're smoking the marijuana and they're doing the brain scans, like for research purposes, they see this restriction of blood flow to the hippocampus. And so,
I didn't know it affects blood flow at all. That's new to me. Suzanne, I'm sending you Teddy and Me, something that will increase blood flow to your pleasure centers, I can guarantee you. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
Savage.
visionary glow, the rosy shafts from heaven. We'll not find it here, but you may find some fodder for your brain. It may save you from a downward spiral that you will regret years from now. I can guarantee you that. You know, there is such a thing as wisdom in the world, and don't assume that it comes in the form of what you're familiar with. Wisdom can come in many forms. I've seen wisdom in bums in the street. I've said that before. I've seen it in my own lifetime. I'll never forget it. Where was this? It was in San Francisco 30 years ago, Columbus Avenue, in front of the old Little Joe's restaurant. He's long gone. He was a nice guy. I can remember to this day eating in that place. I was out there. I used to hang around in North Beach a lot before radio. I don't go there anymore. I don't have the time. I don't know. It was a time in my life when I talked to people. I was looking for people to tell me that, you know, what they knew. I was always like that. Even back in New York when I went to Brother Billy's church up in Harlem, I was walking. I ran into this religious zealot, and he got me enraptured in his church thing, and he said, "You want to come with me, brother?" The next thing I knew, I was in a Baptist church in Harlem, one of the greatest services I've ever been to in my life. So I've always been drawn in by charismatic individuals, and I've learned from them sometimes. I've rarely been led astray by my, let us say, proclivities towards it, or my attraction to such individuals. I've never had anything bad happen to me, to be honest with you. So anyway, I'm in the streets of North Beach, many years ago, and there was a guy you'd call a bum, but he wasn't a homeless bum of the type you'd see today. He was not dirty. He is what you would call a hobo today, if there are any. Long white hair, you know, shabby but clean. I'll never forget to this day, had piercing blue eyes. And I struck up a conversation with him. He was rather hypnotic. And at the time I was searching for God. So I said to this guy who was sort of a hobo, a homeless guy. I said to him, he said, "Can you give me a ride somewhere?" You know, of course you'd say, "You're crazy, he'll kill you." I gave him a ride to an underpass over by Fifth Street at the time. He didn't kill me, incidentally. So you say, "Whoa, boy, you're lucky." I don't know. I think I have intuition. So he didn't slice my throat. I might have sliced his first, incidentally. I'm not so afraid of it. So I gave him a ride over to the overpass. And as he was leaving the car, you know, I knew I'd never see him again. I looked him in the eye and I said, I forget his name. I do remember his name. His name was Moses derives in many different ways. The Moses can also mean Michael. It could be Moshe. There's a lot of different derivations of Moses. Morris, Maurice. These are all derivations of the word Moses, of the root word Moses. So I looked at him and I said to him, I think his name was Moses, by the way. And now that I think of it, I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Moses." Probably, you know, a little psychotic, who knows, but I said, "Do you believe in God?" That's the last thing I asked him. He looked me in the eye with the piercing blue eyes, as I said, and he looked me in the eye and he says, "Where do you think I came from?" Meaning the answer was inherent in the question. You know that answered a lot of questions for me. When you think about it, think about what the man said. He says, "Of course I believe in God. Where do you think I came from?" Think about the simplicity and complexity of that simple answer. He says, "Of course I believe in God. Where did I come from?" It's a very complete answer. Do you understand that? And I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to try to explain what he said and what it means. It answered a lot of questions, for me at that time. So anyway, I've derived a lot from a lot of different people, but the bums of today I really don't think are the same as the hobos of yesteryear, to be honest with you. We have now a border that's been erased by Barack Obama, committing one crime after another, the Department of Homeland Security looking the other way, committing a crime. They should all be arrested as far as I'm concerned. We have sound right now of the Border Patrol Chief Mark Morgan. Listen to what is going on at your border in the last days of Emperor Nero right now on the Savage Nation.
I was in a sector where I saw a 6-year-old and an 11-year-old holding each other's hands that had made the trek from Honduras. I don't refer to that 6-year-old and 11-year-old as a national security or law enforcement threat. But again, the Border Patrol is dedicating a tremendous amount of resources, taking those folks in, processing them. At times, a lot of resources are dedicated to being professional child care providers at this point. When I traveled to
Obama,
RGV...
So Obama has turned Border Patrol agents who were supposed to keep out illegal aliens, keep out criminals, keep out gun runners, keep out drugs. He's turned them into child care workers. He's humiliating them in addition to destroying our border. Listen to the next one.
I recently, when I traveled to RGV, the supervisor was in charge, said, you know, Chief, we're going to do whatever this country asks us to do. But I never thought in my 20 years that I would be, as part of the procurement, ordering baby powder and baby wipes. Actually, I just got from one sector where agents, one of their jobs during the day is to actually make sure that the food, the burritos that were provided, are being warmed properly.
This is what Obama is doing to our law enforcement agents around America. This evil man in the White House is mocking the very meaning of the word Border Patrol. This evil man in the Homeland Security Department is literally humiliating the Border Patrol on their way out the door. And you wonder why Trump won the election? Think about it very carefully, and you'll find out that although he lost the popular vote, there is no question in my mind that without the illegal aliens and all of their family members who have voted, Trump won by a large, large majority. And by the way, you want to break it down a little further? If you were to break down the vote by taxpayer versus non-taxpaying individuals, he would have won by a landslide on the popular vote. Has anyone said that to you yet? Don't tell me that all these people who don't pay taxes have a right to vote. Oh, sure, I knew that. I know they do. But that's only in a crazy country where demagogues arise. Why should a person who pays no taxes, tell me why they should be able to vote the same way a man who pays high taxes vote? Why should the vote be equal? Tell me why. Tell me why it should be equal. What do you think a person without money is going to vote for? They're going to vote for someone who promises them something for nothing. They're going to vote for someone who says they can bring all their relatives in so they can get free medical care, free health care, and free housing. Wouldn't you? If you lived in a crazy country, to let you here and let you vote when you're not allowed to vote? So, you know, you look at the election in that regard, you find out that, yeah, she won by 2 points, this million, that million. Break it down by taxpayers. You may have a different opinion of why he won. He actually won by a landslide amongst taxpayers. Okay? Now let's go back to the important stuff. Former heroin addict, KBET, Troy, line two. Topic, please.
Hi, Michael. I'm a former heroin addict. I developed an opioid pill problem just about the time I started listening to you. I'm 30 years old now.
Wait, hold on. Are you blaming me for your opioid are you blaming me for your opiate addiction?
And coincide. But
Troy. You're blaming me for your opiate addiction?
No, sir. By no means. You're probably one of the most influential men in my life, other than my own father. I've grown up listening to you. I'm 30 now. It started when I was about 15, but went to more related to a car accident. And doctors who at the time would push 1,000 OxyContin down the throat of a teenager without blinking twice. I think we all know the reason why. It's mostly money. But like many others in my city, and I know from what I hear around the country, heroin is what quickly followed. And it destroyed my life. I'm now a father of a 2-year-old, so a new father to my first and only son. I almost lost him along with the rest of my family. I lost everything I owned. Great girlfriends at the time, good job. And it destroyed my life, and I know.
But you say, let me ask. You became addicted because you were in a car accident, you were put on opioids, and you got addicted. That happens too often, right?
Yes, sir. Look,
you want me to go into this story in detail? I'd love to do it. The manufacturer of OxyContin is a criminal. The company that makes OxyContin is a criminal organization, in my opinion. They have been investigated over and over again. They make so many billions of dollars a year that they buy off politicians who have kept them out of prison. Do you know that or not?
I do. Michael, it's gone so far that pharmacies here in town were prosecuted in the mid-2000s for selling opioids over the counter. The problem had gotten so pervasive, and it was so accepted in our society that you have doctors, cops, nurses, our peers, our brothers, our sisters, our fathers, our sons, are now addicted, many undercover because their doctors are still maintaining.
Your OxyContin is so addictive it should be banned altogether, shouldn't even be manufactured.
But also,
obviously, it's one of the most addictive drugs ever conceived, isn't it?
It's almost scientifically exact with heroin. It's almost identical under a microscope. It's synthesized, but other than that,
Let's go back in time for a minute. This isn't the first time that manufacturers have addicted an entire population. At the turn of the 1890 era, 1880, 1890, 1900, people were addicted to a drug called opium, but in its derivatives, mainly in morphine and morphine-based compounds. And it was legal. It was over-the-counter morphine-based compounds. In other words, there was even a medicine, or so you want to call it a medicine, for babies who had teething problems. They're putting on low doses of morphine. You're probably aware of that, right?
That medicine, it was, the ingredients weren't named until a later law, I think it was the FDA, finally came out and said that they had to list the ingredients and actually put poison warnings on these bottles, which time 90% of the companies who manufactured these was just calling poisons went out of business because people finally were able to understand.
All right, so there were lots of drugs put out there, and they were presented as benign. They were giving them to infants. People were wildly addicted across the Western Hemisphere to opiates in the form of morphine-based compounds. They were all legal. The addiction became so bad that the government suggested that they modify the morphine molecule to make it less addictive. So the chemists went to their labs and they devised a modification of the morphine molecule. They modified 2 points on the structure. They made it a 3,6-diacetyl morphine, and it was known as a little drug called heroin. And heroin was offered when it first came out as a cure for morphine addiction, which you probably know to be so. And it was sold as a cure for heroin, for morphine addiction. Well, lo and behold, we know that heroin became certainly more addictive than morphine was. Well, now let's speed up 50 years. Again, the drug industry is told to stop with the heroin, come up with something different. So what did they invent? What did they invent that was given out across America as treatment for heroin addiction? You probably know what they're called. They're called methadone clinics. Am I right?
Well, Suboxone. I was on Suboxone. I actually still am. Believe it.
I was told by people who I know who are addicted that methadone is as addictive, if not more so, than the heroin. What do you say to that?
It is more so, which is why I personally chose Suboxone. Suboxone is longer addicting. It's harder to get off of. The process is longer. The difference is it doesn't get you high. It's a partial agonist rather than, like methadone, a full agonist, which basically is a way for you to function from day to day. You don't have to go see your dealer, commit multiple felonies, risk your life buying on the street to mix up some soup and IV in your arm. You can now go to a clinic and get it daily for a small charge, and you can somewhat proceed with life. So that's methadone.
All right, well, that's certainly a positive argument for the use of such medication, but I'm a fundamentalist when it comes to drugs. I believe that more severe punishments of drug dealers would definitely put a damper into this industry, and I believe that in the age of Trump, we're going to see a big crackdown on the free use of drugs in this country. I think he's not, certainly not at the top of his list, but my guess is that somewhere down the line, 2 years down the line, when every other thing is under control, if it can be as much as it can be, we are going to see a complete sea change in how drugs are administered, prescribed, and taken in this nation. I think we're going to have a much healthier nation. And all I can say is I'm sorry for your problems, and I'll move on. Back in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, here is the best news since Donald Trump became the elected president. He has just picked retired General Mad Dog Mattis for Secretary of Defense. Now, he's not a mad dog. Mattis is one of the greatest generals of modern times. I wrote about him in great detail in my book, Stop the Coming Civil War. If you have the book, check it out tonight, pages 60-61. This indicates to me that in the macro picture, Trump is the best thing for the country in 50 years. This is astounding because amongst military men, he is absolutely venerated. And he will run the sprawling Department of Defense the way it should be run by a former combat veteran, not one of these. Okay, I'll stop right here. This is fabulous. The announcement will be official next week. He is a fabulous man. He was purged by the Stalin in the White House named Barry Obama. He is one of the best of the best, along with others who were thrown out by the Stalin in the White House. All named in my book, Stop the Coming Civil War, purged by this vicious administration for things they didn't even do. He got rid of all of the great men and replaced them with quislings who have virtually in one administration debased and, let us say, weakened the military. Did you know that since 2009, more than 200 U.S. military officers at the rank of colonel or higher had been removed from their commands? Did you know that Obama and his minions of vicious, verminous Castroites were getting rid of them at the rate of one a week? Did you know that? Well, one of them was General James Mattis, who Mr. Trump just appointed as our defense secretary. I will sleep better tonight. He is the former head of the United States Central Command, CENTCOM. In January 2013, Fidel Castro's offshoot here in America dismissed Mattis for being too much of a hawk, especially when it came to the administration's lenient policy toward Iran. Did you know that? You see, like, unlike Quislings in the administration, General Mattis understood how dangerous a nuclear-armed Iran would be to our allies and to U.S. interests in the Middle East. And he wasn't afraid to speak out about it. And for that, the criminal communist in the White House threw him out of the military. Well, he's back now. There are many, many others who need to be brought back. Major General Michael Carey, Vice Admiral Tim Giardina. They were also purged. There were many, many, many who were purged by this evil man in the White House. I pray to God they all come back and America's military will be great again. So this is good news. Retired Marine Corps General James Mattis, we all salute you. God bless Donald Trump. God bless America. This country is on the road to recovery after 8 years of this Castroite in the White House.
Savage.